This is a very deep mimer.
I don't know why we selected it, but we did. It's just, this is who we are today.
So this mimer begins, was based on words that you found in the Shmon Esrei, in the Amida, of Shabbos afternoon's mincha. And Shabbat afternoon, like on Shabbat morning and on Shabbat evening, the Amida, the middle section of the Shmon Esrei, is about the day. So it starts off the same way, same three blessings. It's called Avot. We mentioned Avram, talk about Yitzchak and Yaakov, shield of Abraham, talked about resurrection, which corresponds to Isaac, and we talk about holiness, corresponding to Jacob. And then the belly is kind of carved out. We don't do any asking on Shabbos. Instead, we talk about the holiness of Shabbos. The same thing kind of happens every single Yom Tov, with the exception of Rosh Hashanah, where we have not one blessing in the middle, but rather three blessings, which correspond to the concept of the shofar bless. Okay. So you have to know that holiness waxes. It doesn't wane. It doesn't slowly peter out. But holiness continues to grow. So much so that the holiest moment of Shabbos is on Shabbat afternoon, and especially even after Monday. And what heralds this holiest moment is the Shmon Esrei, is the tefillah, the prayer that we do before. So obviously we're going to talk about this. It's going to have to be very sublime. It's going to be about the rest of Shabbos. It's going to be about the sublime oneness of Shabbos. It's going to be talking about rungs of holiness. And I hope you're able to understand. I do the best I can. So the mimer begins with the words. Before I start the mimer, I should tell you what was recited by the Rebbe on Tes Kislev, which is today. Erev Yud Kislev, which is tomorrow. And the year was 1981. And this mimer was actually edited by the Rebbe. Later on, in 1986, was edited by the Rebbe. Ata Echad, Shimcha Echad. So we start off with the words, you are one, your name is one. Umi Cha'amcha Ki Yisrael, who is like your nation, Israel. So we're talking about God, Ata. We say Ata Echad, you're one, oneness of God. The Shimcha Echad, the name of God is one, meaning the name which represents a persona, if you will. We call a person a name based on our relationship. So you're a doctor, you call doctor. If you're married to the doctor, it's very strange to call your husband doctor or wife doctor, right? The name represents the relationship. So the name which represents the relationship is a metaphor for how we relate to God. God relates to us. He creates us. At some point, he assumes various personas. These ideas are called Shimcha. It's called your name. Ata Echad, you are one. Shimcha Echad, your name is one. Meaning your outer layers of divinity, or this notion of divine persona, something like that. That's also Echad. Umi Cha'amcha Ki Yisrael, who is like your nation Israel? Goy Echad Ba'aretz, a nation that is one, even when it lives amidst the earthly reality. That's the statement which is made in the Shmon Esrei. Umevayer Kveit Kedushas Admor Emtzoi, the Mitl Rebbe, who is Baal HaYilula, the Tes Kislev today is his Yartzeit Hilula. Tomorrow is his Chag HaGeula. The Mitl Rebbe was born, and he was nostalgic on the same day of the month, on the ninth day of Kislev. And on the year that he passed, the next day was the first anniversary of his being released from incarceration on trumped-up charges of sedition. Much like the Alter Rebbe, only even more ominous. So the Mitl Rebbe recited a mimer based on these words, and this mimer is based on that rumination, which this mimer, Shekanira, Hu Hadrush Ata Echad, this is the mimer Ata Echad, Sha'omri B'Shabbos Kodesh Ha'acharon. This is the mimer that the Mitl Rebbe recited on his last Shabbos, last terrestrial Shabbos, last Shabbos on earth. B'Shivtei B'Masar, when he was still, pardon me, let me rejig that, the last mimer before he was released a year earlier. So he was released on Yud Kislev, which was Sunday. Shabbos was Tes Kislev. And on Shabbos afternoon, the last mimer before he was released from incarceration he recited this maimer yet in prison, which is an interesting story of how it came to be that the Mittler Rebbe was allowed to teach chassidus in prison. He became very ill, and they were afraid for his life. And the doctor said, if he can teach Torah, he may regain his health. If you don't allow him to teach Torah, he's not going to make it. And they wanted a life prisoner, not the opposite. So they actually allowed chassidim in. A small coterie of chassidim came in, and Mittler Rebbe continued to teach Torah in prison. So this was the maimer that he recited prior to his release. And that was in the year Tovkuf Pei Zayin, or 1826. Koidim Tfilas Mincha, before the davening of Mincha. All right, so in this maimer of the Mittler Rebbe, where he's emphasizing and explaining the mystical element of Ata Echad, which sounds pretty sublime to begin with, you are one, and he's talking about the mystical element. So the Mittler Rebbe noted that in this portion of the Shmona Esrei, in this formula, everything is in triplicate. Everything comes in threes. We roll the dice like four times, but always in threes. Statement in three, in triplicate. Statement in triplicate. Another statement in triplicate. And then a fourth statement in triplicate. The first statement is, Ata Echad, that's one. Shimcha Echad, that's two. The first sentence is about echad, it's about oneness. You are one, your name is one, your nation is one. That's the first, that's volley one. And then this happens three more times where the prayer formula speaks of the holiness of Shabbos, but it does so through the prism of a triplicate. It speaks about things three times in a row. So the Mittler Rebbe explains in this maimer that the idea of three represents Gimel Hakavim the Chagas. It represents the three elements or dimensions of Chesed Gevura Teferes. Now Chagas or Chesed Gevura Teferes is the notion of right energy, left energy, and the central fulcrum. All of human emotion, it can be divided into three. You're either it's a positive thing, Chesed. You're attracted to something. You're excited about something. The whole range of emotions fits into that. The right emotion. The left emotion is you're unhappy about something. You're fearful about something. You're going to be restraintful or going to be disciplined. That's the left energy. That's Gevura. And then the central energy is a balance, a synergy. It's neither right nor left. One of the metaphors or one of the examples or iterations of Tiferes, of the central energy, is compassion, is rachamim. So if chesed is to give, a person gives. Who does he give to? He gives. What if the people are not deserving? That's not my problem. I like to give. What if it's dangerous to give them? I'm sorry to hear that, but I have to give because it's about my giving. So when you have an extremist on the right, he just wants to give. And the extremist could be giving permission or making room to something which is mortally dangerous. It should sound familiar, actually, certain elements of our society today. So it's all giving, 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 giving. It's blind giving. It can't just give. If you just give, that's extremism, and it's not a healthy. That's what I call liberal fundamentalism. It's not healthy. On the other side, we have discipline, restraint. And discipline and restraint is a very important thing. It's a good thing, actually. In moderation. Taken to an extreme, it becomes very harsh, even horrible, because I'm so exacting, I'm so demanding, I don't leave any room for life. Imagine you had to live under a microscope all day. You'd go crazy. Cut me some slack, you say. I can't handle all this gevura. I can't handle all this discipline. So here on one hand is a person who says, gimme, and you say, sure. You say, hey, you know the guy you're giving that knife to? He's a terrorist. Maybe he wants it for steak. Maybe. But we know who he is. We know what he's done before. I can't be judgmental. I can't look at anybody in a bad way. If he asks for a knife, it must be for a good reason. And then you have to deal with the victims. Sorry, he says. I had no idea. But why didn't you have? You should have known. I couldn't know. I can't. I'm blind to people's faults. I just accept everybody for who they are. And I'm just a loving person. But your love caused me to have great suffering. Oh, I'm really sorry. I can't do anything about that.
Well, sure you could have. No, no, I can't. So that's extremism. That's a very, very bad and unhealthy kind of situation. On the other hand, we could have a gvura, a restraint, which goes haywire, which makes incredible demands, unreasonable demands, and be harsh and unrelenting and draconian and exacting. This is, I can't live with this. Come on. What do you want? Like, we're not robots, we're not angels. Nobody's getting. Nobody deserves. That's true. Nobody really deserves. Everybody's done something wrong at some point. So if he did something wrong at some point, you don't get. And then the guy says, but have Rachmanis. So what do you mean Rachmanis? Rachmanis. Rachmanis is a funny animal. On one hand, what happens out of compassion is give. I give out of compassion. On the other hand, compassion doesn't look through the prism of chesed, of giving. Compassion says, I really shouldn't give you. You really don't deserve. It's Rachmanis. It's, look at my situation. You're an idiot. You got yourself into the situation. I know, but look at the situation I'm in now. Okay, fine. I'll be compassionate. You understand how compassion is like a middle? It's neither to the right nor to the left. Now, of course, I gave you examples of chesed gone haywire and gevurah gone rogue. None of these are necessarily the accurate description of chesed and gevurah. It's just a caricature of chesed and gevurah when it goes extreme. And teferes or rachamim is not always in such an extreme fashion. A person says, you don't deserve, but I'll give you anyway, not because I want to be nice, because it's the right thing to do, but this is, using this all as metaphoric frames. So that's chagas. And the Mitla Rebbe said that ata echad, v'shimcha echad, v'micha amcha kisal goy echad, three times echad, represents right energy, left energy, central energy. Right-left balance. All of life is right-left balance. Call it any which name you want, but that's how it is. So that's what we have four times. Why do we have the four times? So the Mitla Rebbe explains that in the devolution, in triplicate four times, the davening is made up of four different volleys, of four different sentences. So we have this idea of four times. B'dalet ha-madreges ha-kelim kol seder ishtauslus includes the entirety of the order, the devolutionary order of reality. Maschil milufnei ha-tzimtzum. This begins with prior to the tzimtzum. So what is the tzimtzum? The tzimtzum is to diminish, to obscure, to withhold, even to darken. And basically this is what happens. Tzimtzum, or the restraint or concealment, is a very necessary quality if you expect to be able to convey something to somebody or something which is beneath your level of existence or rubric of consciousness. So, if I want to convey a very deep idea to you, and this very deep and profound idea, as I understand it, will not make any sense to you, because I'm understanding it based on the virtue of a certain background and certain experiences, but you don't understand that. So if I'm going to just tell it to you the way I see it, you will be in the dark. Think of a very bright light that is blinding. So what do I need to do? I need in some way to diminish the light. When there'll be less light, when there'll be less intensity, only then will I be able to still see something, like sunglasses, like the light that's being diminished. So it's actually really funny. We have a situation where less light is more light. Sometimes less is more. Sometimes less is absolutely necessary. If somebody wants a drink of water, so it's not a good idea to open the fire hydrant. He and the water may end up across the street by the force of the water. And the cup is long gone. So if you want to have a little drink of water, you need to have restraint. You need to have some kind of cap. At some point in New York City, like the early 80s, you know, these kids were opening up the fire hydrants in the summer. So the police actually figured they can't fight it forever. We were spending the whole day going from fire hydrant, closing up the fire hydrants. So they came to the kids and said, okay, here's what we're going to do. They created a cap, like a sprinkler cap. And they put the little cap on the fire hydrant. And the kids, you know, got into their swimming clothes, and they danced and jumped around in front of the, you know, Brooklyn. You know, there's no splash pads over there. Couldn't afford to go anywhere. So this way, they didn't lose, the city wasn't being drained of water, and the fire hydrant didn't go crazy. Logical thing. And that was a very, very
powerful little cap, because once you uncork the fire hydrant, this is enormous force. And this is the force that's got to put out a fire. So you have a very strong and powerful cap that can restrain it, can hold it back. It's called tzimtzum. So when God wants to create the world, if the world cannot occupy a space where godliness is in its full intensity, so to speak, because there will be no room for us. It's not possible. We wouldn't be able to feel independent. We wouldn't feel we exist. We'll become overwhelmed by the light. It's like trying to project a picture onto the wall before the technology we have today. When the lights are on, you see absolutely nothing. In order to see something, you need to have darkness. The more the darkness, the more sharp the picture becomes. But there is existence before Tzimtzum. Tzimtzum is necessary for us, for our reality. And even in a very lofty level, the highest worlds, which are beyond almost what we can fathom, not almost, they are beyond what we can fathom, nonetheless, that's already after the Tzimtzum. But there's before Tzimtzum. And not only there's before Tzimtzum, there's before Tzimtzum, there's two levels of before Tzimtzum. So Tzimtzum could be like, I want to convey an idea. And you're never going to understand what I'm talking about. So I have to now kind of stop thinking for a moment. Stop thinking the way I'm thinking. I have to collect my thoughts and so I can convey something that's coherent. Something that you're able to appreciate, so you're able to grasp instead of just overwhelming you with words that mean absolutely nothing. I remember once being a yeshiva student in Los Angeles, and late one night a guy walks into the yeshiva, a very weird looking dude, and he sits down and he starts to ramble off nuclear equations. And I could not understand one word he's saying. In fact, I did not even know if he was brilliant or insane. To me, it sounded one and the same. It sounded brilliant, but it sounded insane at the same time. I never found out, actually. I the guy was there, and he was rambling, a crazy person, and left. And he may have been brilliant and crazy. He may just have been crazy. Just saying narishkeit, you know, just throwing about jargon that made no sense. So sometimes brilliance is so brilliant that unless you're initiated, you think it's gibberish. So this is the idea of tzimtzum. But before tzimtzum, there's also an existence. It's like saying, until you convey your feelings, they don't exist. That's ridiculous. I have feelings. You may not know what my feelings are, but I have feelings. And in fact, I may not even know how I feel about this. Something happens. I react. But my reaction is so raw. It's so in the moment. I don't even know. People say, how do you feel about that? I don't even know how I feel about it. I'm not sure yet. I have to sort it out myself. Forget about what I'm telling you. I don't even know what I'm telling myself. I can't even understand what's going on myself. But obviously, there's something going on before that. There's something deeper within our consciousness. It all has to come from somewhere. So there's koydem atzimtzum. And then, the Mitl Rebbe says that these three levels of chagas, ata echad, v'shimcha echad, v'micha amcha, kesol goy echad ba'aretz, that represents, that first volley represents the gimel kavim, the three lines, the way they are, lifnei ha-tzimtzum, prior to the tzimtzum. The gam lifnei ha-tzimtzum, the Rebbe says, even before tzimtzum, yesh hischalkos. There's also hischalkos of gimel kavim. There's also these three different dimensions. Even before tzimtzum, there's some kind of activity like that going on, only we don't see that activity. When you have an earthquake, long before there's any kind of seismic activity that can be measured by the technology we have, there is something going on. It doesn't come out of nowhere. It wells up from somewhere. There's some kind of force that begins to develop at some point. It's only at a certain point in time or in the development of this activity are we actually able to pick up signs of it.
Three dimensions of chesed.
Chesed v'ur teferes, but it's not called chesed v'ur teferes because it's like too profound, too sublime for names even. But there's still our gimel kavim. And the Rebbe says, "Be'ofen sheshayach inyan hischalkos lifnei ha-tzimtzum," as it would be possible for us to divide up reality, the lifnei ha-tzimtzum reality. The next sentence in Shemoneh Esrei is, "Tiferes gedula ateres Yeshua yoy menucha kedusha." So we talk about a great glory. We talk about a crown of salvation, and we talk about serenity and holiness. And this is la'amcha nasata. This is all different descriptive terminology used for Shabbos. This is la'amcha nasata. That's given to your nation. Hu inyan gimel kavim. This represents those three dimensions. K'moy shehem la'acharei ha-tzimtzum, as they exist in the post-tzimtzum reality. But it's the post-tzimtzum reality, and I'm still sorting it out for myself, so to speak, It's ba'ilum es ein seif shalamailam atzilus. This is within divinity that's before atzilus. Atzilus is the first world we're able to use some kind of descriptive terminology for. And even though atzilus is a very, very lofty world, a world that we can't understand or fathom, it's like the light and the source of the light. It never really feels independent, but the light, in fact, is identifiable as outside of the source of light. There's or, there's rays of light, there's mur, there's source of light. They are not one and the same. It's true that when the mur goes dark, the ur disappears too, for the most part. When there's no source of light, then the light or the effulgence or rays will also disappear most of the time, even though stars is not like that, because the atmosphere is very clean, very pure. But most of the time, when you have light and source of light, at least what's observable to us in this world, take away the source of light, the light is gone. The sun sets, everything goes dark. It's not dark yet? Yeah, because the sun didn't fully set yet. And that itself is a question, halacha. When is called sunset? When the disk of the sun is no longer visible? Or when the rays of the sun that peer over the horizon are no longer visible because the earth continues to turn? And that's, of course, a really good question. Because even after the disk of the sun is no longer visible, the light of the sun is still visible. The rays of the sun are still peering over. And to be sure, even when the rays of the sun are gone and night begins to fall, it's still not as dark as it'll be in 3 or 4 hours, because the further away we get from the sun, the horizon is from the sun, the darker it gets. And the darkest is when the sun is in the polar opposite of where we are, which is called midnight. It's the darkest. And then when the sun begins its journey back around, or when we begin to spin, what happens then? Then the night starts getting lighter until some point where you can't even see all the stars. Only Venus becomes visible. That's called a Leis HaShachar, morning star. Point being that when we talk about the world of Atzilus, we're talking about the world of light. We're talking about the world that's called the world of emanation. It's not a dense reality. It's not a reality that you can actually pick up and store in a container. But nonetheless, it's still an identifiable reality. So we have before Tzimtzum. We have the post-Tzimtzum, but the post-Tzimtzum before it's been articulated. So there's a raw qualia or a subconsciousness that's prior to any kind of Tzimtzum. I don't know what it is. It's before the Tzimtzum. Then there's the Tzimtzum when it gets filtered, it kind of gets compartmentalized. It has some kind of definition, but it's not really identifiable yet. And then we get to the world of Atzilus, which is the world of actual consciousness in the metaphor. So we have this idea of Seder Shtalshlos, that the world and how it has to be created, there's before Tzimtzum, and there's three elements there. There's the post-Tzimtzum, but that's three elements. It's La'amcha Nasata, was given to your nation. The word Nesina, says the Rebbe, is Nitan Miyad Liyad B'lishinu. It's handed from one entity to the other. It's handed off. It doesn't change. It remains the same. So even though it's before Tzimtzum and it's after Tzimtzum, but realistically speaking, there's no world that's identifiable. And after this, we get into the world of Atzilus. Avram Yogel, Yitzchok Eranen, Yankiv Avonav Yinuchuvay. We talk about Avram Avinu and his element. There you go. Now you already see the three dimensions. Avram is Yogel. Avram is right energy. Avram can't say no to Yishmael. Avram doesn't know how to kick him out. Avram doesn't know how to be disciplined, so to speak. Right? His emphasis is giving. And then we have Avram Yogel, Yitzchok Eranen, a different terminology. Yitzchok, extreme discipline. Very exacting, very harsh, very demanding, very, very, very persistent. He's digging the wells. He's digging into Esav. Amazing. He's doing, nothing is free-flowing. Everything is intense. It's Yitzchak, it's left energy. Then we have Yaakov Uvanov. Yaakov, as he's filtered through his children, the energy of Yaakov comes through the full prism of the 12 Shvatim. This is your Nuchuvai. This is the idea of peace and serenity. So we have, once again, the three Kavim, and this is in the world of Atzilus. But in the world of Atzilus, as it is expressed in its emotional, it's an emotive framework. And then finally, we have the second half of Atzilus, which is the functional half of Atzilus, which is called Nehi, or Netzach HaYisayit. So I have feelings. I'm happy about this. I'm excited about it. Or I'm not. I'm nervous. I have anxiety about it. Or I'm amazed by this. This is, it's awe-inspiring. It's really caught my attention. The beauty of it is, the beauty has caught my eye, and so on and so forth. That's all an emotional level. And then we have the way this turns into a functional level. Because you're excited by something, then you become competitive with it. Competition means I'm engaging with what's going on around me. So that's the idea of Netzach. Then there's Hoid. Hoid means glory or splendor, which is inward, like the beauty or glory of calligraphy, or of 10,000 soldiers marching in perfect synchronicity. It's the beauty of, you don't care what's going on around you. the beauty of the person who comes every single day to work exactly on time, doesn't have to talk to anybody, doesn't need to know anything else. He's the programmer, he's focused, he knows what he's got to do. He's totally immersed. It's an awesome thing. It's a beautiful thing. The beauty of consistency. And then we have the idea of yesod, which is to actually engage with, actually connect, not just being competitive with, but I'm actually connecting, transcending self to some degree. That's the lower level of atzilus. And that's why the fourth statement is, we talk about menucha. Menuchas avo redava. Menuchas emes ve'emuna. Menuchas shalim hashket vetach. We have these three levels of a menucha, which is a serenity, which resonates with the idea of peace. Avo redava. We have a menucha, a serenity of Shabbos, a rest of Shabbos, which is emet, which is truth. Truth is very exacting. Truth is very harsh. A lot of people like the truth. That's gevura. And then we have a menucha of shalom. Shalom is balance or peace. So here we actually see the three on a functional level. The menucha as it's one of love, the exuberant, buoyant, loving menucha. The menucha which is true, the true menucha, real menucha. And then we have the menucha which is shalom. And that's hashket v'vetach, that is able to endure. And that's finally the last level of atzilus, which is called nehi, netzach yisoid of atzilus, as explained at length in the drush. So the Rebbe basically recaps this very, very deep rumination of the Mittler Rebbe. And then the Rebbe says, what does it have to do with the Parsha? We know that our Rebbeim were very exacting and precise about everything. Every Maimer, a Maimer that's spoken of about Shabbos afternoon, this Maimer couldn't be said any Shabbos afternoon, but it was said on this Shabbos afternoon. What Parsha was it? Parsha's Vayetze. Why? So the Rebbe suggests, and this is the Rebbe's Chiddush here, that this is one of the reasons that this Maimer was said on Shabbos Parshas Vayetze, because this idea is first alluded to in the Torah in the opening verses of Parshas Vayetze, that it says Yaakov Avinu falls asleep on the Temple Mount, and he has this vision, or this dream. And what does he see in his nocturnal vision? He sees a ladder, and the ladder is rooted in the ground, and its top reaches the very heavens. The Hine Sula Mutzav Arza, the ladder is rooted on the ground. The Reishai, the head of the ladder, Magia Hashemaima, reaches the highest heavens. Shekoi, this we know from the Zohar, refers to Sulam Dat Sleisa. The Zohar says that the ladder is a metaphor for prayer. Sheba Hasulam, the Tfila, in the metaphoric ladder of prayer, there are Dalad Shlivis, there are four rungs. And the four rungs, this represents the four different elements of prayer. There's the introductory verses, Psukei Dezimra. And then we have, after that, the Birchas Krishma, the blessings which prepare us for Shema. We have the idea of Krishma, which is Kabbalah Samach HaShemayim, and then acceptance of the yoke of heaven. And then we have Shemona Esrei, which is total oneness, which is communion with God. So that's not something, you don't just jump into Shemona Esrei. You have to, so to speak, lower yourself into davening, or pick yourself up into davening, whatever it is. You have to become immersed in it. It's something that has gradations and rungs. It's Seder Ishtashlos. And the truth is that this is Maskal of Nat Simtzum. So if you think that davening is only something that you do consciously, even in your pre-conscious preparation for davening, even when you're sometimes so tired and just saying words of davening, and you're not actively understanding it, and there's also some activity. There's the pre-Simtzum activity too. It represents the pre-Simtzum level because everything follows the same pattern, the same kind of gestalt. And this goes on within ourselves as well. And here is the point now. The Rebbe continues in the Maimer and he says, the final word is, Menucha Shlema, perfect serenity, Sha'at Reitzeba, that you God want. In other words, after he talks about the three levels, then comes the perfection. Shlema Sadekula, perfection of everything, this is true sublime oneness, Achdus Apshuta. That higher than the three elements or three dimensions, the right, left, center, even before all of this, even before it is a tzimtzum, there is a deeper oneness that pervades all. And that deeper oneness, from that deeper vantage point, there is no right, there is no left, there is no center, everything is one. And this oneness, yakiru v'necho v'yedu, this is something that your children, Hashem, can know, it's something they can recognize and know. In other words, banecha refers to neshamas as they exist within a bodily, a terrestrial reality. So when you exist in a terrestrial reality, yakiru v'yedu, you're able to know even this level. And the reason is because me'itcha hi menuchasam, this comes from Hashem himself, that the menucha is me'itcha. Itcha means with Hashem himself. Me'itcha mamish, with the oneness. In other words, that with all of the different rungs of holiness, and there are many, four rungs of holiness, and the four rungs of holiness have three levels. With all these rungs of holiness, the most sublime oneness is only available to us when we're living right here in this world. Because when we're living right here in this world, then comes the menucha shlema, then comes the ultimate perfection. The ultimate perfection is something which is equal in all of us. It doesn't matter if you're a tzaddik, it doesn't matter if you're a simple person, like the Rebbe says later in this maimer, when it comes to the food of Shabbos, when it comes to the davening of Shabbos, there are different levels of appreciation, different levels of delight, different levels of connecting. But then there's the essential oneness of Shabbos. And the essential beauty and oneness of Shabbat Kodesh, the Holy Shabbos, is something that's relevant and can touch and transform each and every single one of us equally, because it's transcendent of levels. It's so much deeper than any kind of level that you could describe or any kind of experience that you could possibly paint. It goes beyond this. And this oneness is what's given to each and every one of us on Shabbos. And that, I guess, is the point.
And it starts at that point.
Maybe. We start with sublime oneness. We go through all these different realms and all these different levels. And then the bottom line is, the real truth is, the oneness of Shabbos belongs to us. Why? Just by dint of the fact that we are neshamas, begufim, bodies, and souls invested in bodies here in this earth. That's where the most profound and sublime and deepest oneness of Shabbos can become ours. Obviously, we have to open the door and let Shabbos into our life. But if we let Shabbos into our life, then the sublime oneness is able to become a part of our common experience. And maybe that's why Shabbos affects everybody. The Gemara says, even Amoritz doesn't lie on Shabbos. You know, from there, we could go in various directions as how this expresses itself. But the deepest message here is that the oneness of Shabbos pervades the existence for all of us. I warned you before we start, it's a very deep mimer. So.
Maybe I'll recognize it.